there. Thanks for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal, a weekly discussion on antidepressants and the issues surrounding them.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Let's Talk Withdrawal, a new weekly podcast discussing antidepressants. Thanks so much for listening so far and for your reviews. It really makes a difference and helps this podcast to reach more people. This week, we have an interview with Daryl. Daryl entered the mental health care system very early in life and describes his struggles with Tourette's syndrome, OCD, and treatment with antipsychotic and antidepressant drugs. Daryl also talks honestly about PSSD, which is post-SSRI sexual dysfunction. This is a condition which is not widely known about and little understood, but is very personal and difficult to discuss, so I'm grateful to Daryl for being so open about his experiences. Daryl, thank you so much for talking to us today. Can I start by asking you to tell us a little about your background and how you came to be on your medication?
I believe that the toxicities of vaccines and pesticides are affecting us in different ways and making a lot of us highly sensitive. And I believe I was one of those highly sensitive people. And what they call Tourette syndrome and OCD, autism, I believe they're all just another name for chemical assault injuries. And so I was a highly sensitive child. And then when I was in school, when I started school, this wasn't understood and I was put against the wall a lot and I used to dream of running away and it aggravated me and what was called OCD and Tourette syndrome became worse and eventually I did run away. And then that's how I got more involved with the whole mental health system.
And when was the first time you recall treatment with medication starting?
I wasn't at school. And I was appearing problematic. So my mum got the GP to come round because she had to go to work. And the GP came round. She was very nice. And at some point, I'm not sure, I probably saw her a few times. She was very nice, but I believe she was misguided in giving me like bright orange antidepressant liquids. And the diagnosis, I believe mental health is a scam. I got the diagnosis and the drugs, and then I got to see more child psychiatrists and stuff, and then I was sent away to a child mental hospital as well, and then I had my diagnoses and my drugs.
And Daryl, what age were you at this point?
I was 9 years old.
That must have been so scary for a youngster to suddenly be put in an unfamiliar environment and treated with medications.
Yeah, the thing that was most scary, I didn't question the dangers of the medications because I didn't think people would put me in harm. I didn't think especially nice people would put me in harm. I didn't think the doctors would put me in harm. But the thing that did scare me before I went was the idea of, you know, hospitals have white coats and what kind of experimentations they do on you. But it appears in such a sanitized way and the people are generally quite nice, at least how you are. They appear to be nice, so it doesn't appear to be an experiment, but I think it was a really wrong experiment, this whole mental health thing. Everyone around me was on drugs, and my drugs were antipsychotic drugs for Tourette's syndrome and antidepressant drugs for OCD.
And what about the side effects of the drugs you were taking? What were the most troubling things for you?
I didn't notice a lot of the things. I believe it affected my sexuality in a way I didn't understand. And when I, the amount of wet dreams I was having in the night was, I think, extremely excessive for what it should have been. I would be waking up like 6 times in the night. So it affected my sexuality. It made me emotionally off the unhinged. Like I was crying all the time. I was extremely emotional, which was then interpreted as mental illness. And I was very sporty before, despite like having my my nature of just like my Tourette syndrome and OCD is just like the way a place I guess I it was like my safe de-stress place that I retreat in. I went from being very sporty just because of that, to being very overweight very quickly as well. But it didn't seem like much of a problem because my mom was happy and we were getting that help regardless of the so-called medications. There was lots of people around to help and stuff, and I got to be around other kids that were also a little bit strange.
So during that time that you were taking antidepressants and antipsychotics, were you thinking that these were drugs that you would have to take for life, or did you think about stopping them?
Well, they made me watch cartoons which said that I had the serotonin in my brain fires too fast or something like that. So that suggested that I had to take the medication to keep it corrected. But there was something wrong with my brain, which obviously later turned out to be a fabrication, which is it's very hard to understand the deception of that later on. There were promises of, well, maybe one day when you're better, if you take the medication now, maybe one day when you're better and older, you can come off them, maybe one day when you're better. But I think that was pretty much like that was more of a promise to, you know, encourage me to take them more than anything. I think it was definitely an empty promise. I believe it was more everyone takes their medication for their condition and they're expected to take them for life. That's how it felt.
And Daryl, what's your position now? Are you still taking the drugs or have you stopped?
No, I got really sick. By the time I was 21, my genitals went numb and my stomach was in a lot of pain. So some really like strange things were happening to my body. So I went to the psychiatrist's local mental health center and I got blood tests at the local doctors, because their psychiatrist had heard of it but didn't know what to do. So my blood test came back really wrong with high prolactin and hyperthyroidism and all these kind of stuff. So I cold turkeyed off of it.
That must have been very tough on top of everything else you were already having to cope with. How did you find that experience?
It was terrible. It felt like it was so deceptive. They never told me that there'd be a withdrawal. There was no plan to taper. Nobody knew anything. Obviously, the most scariest thing was that they didn't know what they were doing. That's what it absolutely appeared to be, that they didn't know what they were doing, and it was reckless, and my genitals were numb, which is the most horrifying. It's like a horror movie. I really didn't expect that, but I was looking forward to the day I might recover, which didn't happen in return to my genitals. But it was horrific. Deception is, it felt like my government were trying to kill me and they didn't tell me.
Daryl, you've mentioned PSSD, post-SSRI sexual dysfunction. Could you tell us a bit more about that and how it affected you?
It was that was obviously a motivation to stop taking the drugs as soon as possible. Yeah. Although I was given the green light to, it's affected me so badly. Then I was at 21, going to the male clinics where they were testing with injections of Viagra and stuff. And it still wasn't working and they couldn't really understand why. I mean, that kind of thing should work. But with PSSD, sometimes that kind of thing doesn't really work because it's more a different type of damage. So being in there, and I was wondering what other people were doing while I was in those places being injected with in my sensitive place, and I was at a young age, and I couldn't believe how reckless there's a phenomenon with antipsychotic induced sexual dysfunction, and that's in the British National Formulary. It states that that's one of the main reasons people stop taking antipsychotic medication, and obviously antidepressants are strongly associated with it too. But my body didn't go back to normal. And to be honest, it's ruined my life.
And PSSD, is that a relatively common result of taking antipsychotics, do you think?
The British National Formulary states that while you're taking them, it's a very, very strong reason why people come off. But it's not something that is reported on the doctors seem to care about treating your so-called mental illness more than the damage they cause you. So I don't think people are aware of how common it is. I don't think anybody actually knows. But there is a time I was in a room about and asked questions about your medications day, and after I admitted it, because I was 21, everybody else in the room admitted it too. So that's like 20 mental patients all admitted they had sexual dysfunction from their medications, which that's just anecdotal, but no one knows how common it is.
And given all those terrible experiences, how are things for you now?
I don't feel human compared to other people. I feel so unhuman, and I remember very strongly the way my government allowed this to happen. And it feels like the reason it was allowed to happen is pathetic, based on a belief system that wasn't backed up by safety or science. And they didn't protect the patient. They allowed the drug companies to run ragged with my body. And I don't think it is much of an accident when both drugs are very synonymous with sexual interference.
Daryl, I have to say, listening to you, you speak so honestly and clearly about this. And given the experiences that you've had and the difficulties you've endured, to stand up for other people is incredibly brave, and it will help others.
Thank you. I appreciate the platform you've allowed me to do that.
Thank you, Daryl. I just wanted to ask, if you had a friend who was thinking of taking an antidepressant or an antipsychotic medication and came to you for advice, what would you say to them?
I'd tell them it's not worth it. I'd tell them you can feel better or worse in terms of whatever perceived mental problem you believe you are experiencing. That might get better or worse, but the damages are reckless in terms of the safety, and they may be permanent. They may not be temporary damages, whereas the problems you're experiencing will go up and down.
I also wanted to talk a little bit about your website, and I recommend that listeners visit it to read more about your experiences. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Thanks. It's sterilizing the mentally ill is basically because it's such a dirty secret, and instances like that, like in the room where everybody admitted that their medications were doing that to them, it seems like such a dirty secret. So I didn't know quite how to respond to it. Really feels like my government have done that, and I can't believe that. It's a belief that the mental health charities won't do this, have this discussion. They will always say somebody that promotes the drugs and seeking treatment, and they are afraid to mention the harms through the belief in that system is a belief system of taking drugs. Yeah. It's not a sound, helpful science, and the risks are far bigger than we have been led to believe. It's downright dangerous, and I'm horrified that the people that done this to me was in a pathetic way. I really believe it was in a pathetic way, because they believe that the drugs save lives and this stuff.
I wanted to say that on my website, jfmoore.co.uk, you can find Daryl's website in the links page. I have to say also, Daryl, that listening to your experiences and the others that I've spoken with, it seems that drugs have pushed a lot of the compassion out of mental health treatment.
Yeah, it really has. And I believe it. There's a really worrying thing that it might actually get worse instead of them dealing with it. Because society's problems are not being dealt with as a result. So they're going to open up more mental health treatment centers at every doctor's clinic. And every problem that's real is going to get referred onto this mental health mystery of drugs and stuff, which is going to injure more people. And there's mental health training, which is popping up everywhere, which is like mental health pimping. Because people are just going to be referred to a doctor that gives them these mental health drugs. And that's a really worrying thing for the future that I hope that people will find a better way than I would call those mental health training, mental health re-education camps, because real problems are going to be, people are going to get shoved down to the doctor with drugs. I can't believe it could get worse, but it actually might.
I agree. There's a risk that if we continue to rely on drugs as the first option treatment for mental health before understanding the kind of trauma that someone has experienced in their lives, then we're just manufacturing a bigger crisis for 10 or 20 years down the road. Daryl, you've been so honest and so forthright. I'm really grateful to you for talking to me. And if I'd have been able to listen to you and the others when I was thinking about taking an antidepressant, it would have helped me decide, and I wouldn't be in the position that I'm in today. So thank you for being willing to talk about your experiences.
Thank you. It's important. It's really good that you've done this.
It was shocking to hear of Daryl's experiences and the bravery required to endure that and still be willing to be open and try to do your bit for other people. To be honest, most of us can't even imagine it. For Daryl and the others that we've heard from, we need to get this message out as loudly as we can to as many as we can. You can help us do this by listening in, telling others to listen in, and reviewing this podcast on iTunes.
Feedback.
Thank you for getting in touch with your feedback, questions, and comments. And I've had an email from Caroline this week, who kindly sent in her story to share with you.
I started on SSRIs in 2001 when we lost my nephew. 6 months later, I had a massive panic attack. I thought I was dying and rushed to A&E. I went to my GP and he prescribed an SSRI antidepressant. I left assuming the panic attacks would stop, but they didn't. These attacks and anxiety meant that I had to give up working. I continued taking the antidepressant and I was doing well, but in 2005 my doctor wouldn't give them to me anymore, saying that they had been withdrawn due to concerns about teenage suicides in Wales. I was changed to citalopram and the changeover went well. In 2014 the citalopram stopped working completely. My doctor then wanted to change me to sertraline, which meant me weaning off citalopram and then slowly upping the sertraline. This whole time I was still suffering with excessive anxiety and having frequent panic attacks. When the changeover was happening, I kept thinking to myself, why am I putting these chemicals in my body when they aren't doing anything? So I decided to stop the sertraline completely. As soon as I stopped, I kept getting brain and body zaps, like a short, sharp electric shock. These also affected my vision. It's been about 18 months since I stopped the sertraline. I still get the brain zaps, but not as often, perhaps once or twice a week instead of many times a day. If I had known about the side effects and withdrawal problems, I know for certain I wouldn't have taken these antidepressants and would have asked for other help. Now, 16 years later, I have built up a great support network and I have a great therapist, which is what I would have wanted all those years ago instead of tablets. I know there are horror stories on the internet and social media about antidepressants, but it is so difficult to get the information needed to make a choice about treatment. You believe that these tablets are a magic cure, and I found out the hard way that they are not. They only mask the problem. As I learn through my therapy, the anxiety is part of me, and it is all about how you manage your thinking. It's great that people like you are telling the real story of these drugs. The only other option is to go online, and that just adds to the anxiety. I would like people to be strong enough to question their doctors about the medications they are given, but this is so difficult when you are at rock bottom. I think doctors could help by being more honest about side effects and withdrawal. I also wish that there was more funding for mental health so we could access therapy more quickly, rather than just walking away with pills.
I just want to thank Caroline for taking the time to write in and share that with us. I also wanted to mention a couple of support resources that I've found useful and I hope that you might too. Firstly, I often visit the website survivingantidepressants.org. This is a website which is dedicated to providing peer support for tapering. There's a vibrant and active community of people willing to help others, and if you need support, you'll find it here. To find the website, go to www.survivingantidepressants.org. I also wanted to mention a Facebook group called Drop the Disorder. This group is a collection of psychologists, therapists, counsellors, patients, and other mental health professionals that are dedicated to discussing and challenging the biomedical model of distress. There are very interesting discussions here about the current treatment options for mental health, and it's well worth joining in. Please note that this is a moderated group, so you'd need to ask permission to join. Just go to Facebook and search for Drop the Disorder.
Please do not increase, decrease, or stop your psychoactive prescription medication without the advice and support of a medical or mental health professional.
So thanks so much for listening in. Remember to rate and review us on iTunes and to spread the word too. Ask your GP to listen to this podcast. Ask your therapist to listen to this podcast. Ask your family and friends to listen in. Let's spread the word as far as we can and let's get a conversation happening. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, take care.
Thank you so much for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal. Come back next week for more news and views. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review and subscribe in iTunes.